The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It is game six tonight of the NBA Finals on this Thursday. And we will talk about Kevin Durant in the future and were the Warriors negligent in sending him out on the court. The future now, where does Kevin Durant end up? It's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks here. A week from today is the NBA draft for the Suns. A week from today. So James Jones is going to be on display in full form doing his thing with Robert Sarver behind the scenes. And in what direction will they go, and for Monty Williams too. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how that plays out. I'm going to talk about Durant in tonight's game number six here in a bit. Greinke is throwing tonight in D.C. The Diamondbacks have four games against the Nats, who are really scuffling. The F-bombs were flying last night on NBC, which is always entertaining and fun. The Stanley Cup for St. Louis, first one ever, and they celebrate. When you have live microphones around athletes that win a championship and people get offended, I mean, come on. That's just how it works, okay? Turn the mics off. Alex Morgan being criticized for a five-goal performance. We'll talk about that. This is the start of Father's Day weekend for me because it is day one of the U.S. Open, and this year it's at Pebble Beach. Like a couch, an adult beverage, couple snacks, and I'm good until Sunday afternoon. Maybe a bathroom break. I don't even know if a shower is necessary. Like, just lay there. Just do nothing. I won't, though. So I'm very excited for the Open getting going, and especially at Pebble Beach. We're going to have our Father's Day. I like doing a Father's Day theme. I've done this forever and ever and ever. I used to do the show of give me the sports memory that you have with your dad when you went to a sporting event where you two really connected. And what usually happens, well, what always happens is the phone lines are full of people, and they're usually grown men who are sobbing because their dads have passed away and they wish they could relive those memories with them. And that's all great. This year, the Father's Day theme is a very raw book. It's been written by Jeff and Brian Becker, the Beckers. Jeff Becker is considered the best, in my opinion, best trainer for young basketball, even college basketball talent in Arizona. He trains over at Powerhouse Hoops. Jeff and his father wrote this book together after the father. Imagine this, you're 14 years of age, your dad comes home and says, yeah, so I've got a porn problem and I've got multiple things going on the side of my marriage. I've not been faithful. And you're Jeff Becker and you're 14 and you hear this. So now Jeff is 31 and he and dad reconciled. Marriage was restored. And the whole idea behind this book, A Tender Lions, is growing up without a father, the fatherless, or really if you're not that close to your dad. There's actually study guides and chapter summaries that they have here that can walk you through and unpack some baggage. I think guys in general, we all put on a great face. Yeah, I was really close with my dad. Well, really, were you? I can just be straight up with you. I didn't have a dad around. He left when I was nine. So there's stuff that I had to unpack and still unpack. But I think at Father's Day, it's a very raw read and very good to open your mind up to, yeah, there's sports involved in it. So Brian Becker Skyped in. Jeff, we taped this recently here in studio. Jeff was here in studio, Brian via Skype. I think it's compelling, and it comes up here in about 8 minutes as we do our Father's Day show every year. Goody is going to be with us. I sat next to Bill. Actually, my wife sat next to Bill and his daughter last night at a screening for Toy Story. I think I saw Bill wiping his eyes. I think. Now, we can't. We can. The embargo has been lifted. We can talk about that movie today, but Bill wants to wait a week. I'll just tell you that Toy Story 4 was really good. That's all. And it was a bunch of adults that were older than me that were laughing, and there were people wiping their eyes at the end. And it wasn't, you know, what you would expect. I think it's just, if you have kids under the age of 30, then you've gone through all four of these Toy Stories. So, and this one was really good. It had a lot of twists to it. And it was funny. It was great. Well spent. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. Okay, so we talk about Sagicor now, and as you're sitting there today at your cubicle, or you're listening to me tonight and you're on the elliptical, and you're thinking, okay, it's almost the dead of summer. I'm going to have some downtime. I've been so busy that I've been putting off things that I know that matter. And Brad sits here and tells me every day, or I see him on TV every day on the Football AZ show, talking about Sagicor now and protecting what matters most. And I finally need to do it. I can give you guys heartbreaking stories and try and pull your heartstrings about life insurance and people that didn't have it. And I can also give you the other side of the coin that they did. And when they did unexpectedly pass away, the check was there within a very short period of time. Whatever your situation is, protect what matters most and do it at Sagicor now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. All right, the Beckers here in a few minutes. Free agency in the NBA will start the evening of June 30th. July 1st is when, actually June 30th, they can sign. They can actually not wait until midnight. And Kevin Durant was one of the big names out there in this year's class. Kawhi Leonard, of course, is another one. Kyrie Irving is another one. The way that it is working out now, with Kevin Durant having Achilles surgery yesterday, he ruptured his Achilles, he had surgery yesterday. There's a lot to unpack here. A, who was negligible, if anybody? We always want to blame the who. Was it Kevin Durant saying unequivocally, I am playing? Was it Kevin Durant being convinced to go out and play because the Warriors needed him? When Steve Kerr said, you have to ask General Manager Bob Myers about the decision to play Kevin Durant, was that Steve Kerr wiping his hand saying, I don't want to get involved in this? At some point in time, the Kevin Durant being asked to play, forced to play, wanting to play, he can say whatever he wants now, but the doctors of Golden State are under review. They are. And so will Kevin Durant be able to play in December? No. Will Kevin Durant be able to play in February? Maybe. I'm no doctor. I'm only going off of people who I read, who I trust, who I respect, that are not going to fire off pop guns and just sit here and say, yeah, KD's this and KD's that. No. Kevin Durant coming back next year. So if you are the New York Knicks and you're Kevin Durant, and the Knicks haven't been to the postseason in 20 years, feels like. And that may be right. Why in God's green earth would you say, look, I can't play until February and I'm going to just rehab and then I'll come back and play in New York? Because if you're not ready to play and the pressure to play and the pressure to perform, why? Why would you do that? So I would say New York, out of here, not happening. Okay, let's go over to the Lakers. Lakers are sitting there reportedly in the mix on the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. By the way, would you trade LeBron James for Anthony Davis straight up? So when you look at where the Lakers are in all of this, if Kevin Durant wants to come to LA and play for the Lakers or the Clippers, to me, the Clippers are the wild card in all of this. Because Jerry West sits over there in the corner and he may be approaching 80 or at 80 years of age. It doesn't matter. He's still one of the smartest, if not the smartest guy in basketball, the logo. And if he decides, you know what, I'm going to take Kevin Durant. I'm going to sit on Kevin Durant and I'm going to have Kevin Durant next March or April round into form and we're going to be just fine. Is he ever going to be the same player? None of us know. None of us know. And so the intrigue now, and it's horrible that this has happened, but this summer with free agency and Kevin Durant sitting out there, if you're a team that says, you know what, he wants to win, but he's going to be sitting out most of next season. We're not there next year, but we may be there the year after and the year after that. Would you put something together to go after him? A. B, doesn't it make sense for him just to go back to Golden State where he can sit on the bench for a year and have Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Steph Curry do all the heavy lifting and do all the heavy work? Isn't that what you want? And this shot right here is just, it's just gruesome. Man, that's just, when it flexes out like that, oh my gosh, it's awful. So as the Suns are sitting here, I'm not suggesting the Suns are going to get involved in Kevin Durant now. That's not what I'm saying or suggesting. But I do think it brings a different dynamic to NBA free agency, which gets underway here in just a couple of weeks. Which team is going to go take the risk? It would seem like Golden State would make the most sense. If you're in the Western Conference, which the Suns are, and they're the bottom feeders, how quickly can they get into the top eight? Which of the top eight is a descending team? Could you make the argument next year? It might be Golden State. Age catching up, complacency, the grind of trying to get through to another final, so on and so forth. As for tonight, so you've got DeMarcus Cousins, who's trying to become a force inside, but he's not good defensively. You have Golden State just trying to get enough offense out of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson because Draymond Green, they've basically taken him out of the mix. And on the other side, for Toronto, the pressure, obviously the pressure's on the Warriors to win, but if you're Toronto, do you just say, you know what, we're going to give it our best effort and we're going to go back and win Game 7 at home? It would really be a tremendous, tremendous turn of events if Golden State loses Kevin Durant a second time and they do find a way to come up and win this series. So I'm all in tonight. I think tonight's going to be a lot of fun. I've got the popcorn. I'm going to sit and watch. I'm going to take it all in. This is what it's all about. The Durant stuff has only added to it. And then just look at the next 2 weeks in free agency and the draft next week. It's going to be a great NBA offseason. It really is. All right, on the other side, Tender Lions, Jeff and Brian Becker, very raw, I will just tell you up front. Father's Day read, Father's Day book. I think you'll enjoy this. That's next, then Goody later in the show. I'm Brad Sussmat. So with Father's Day coming up, every year I like to have a book to encourage you guys to read. It's funny how sports works. I'll just give you a little backstory here. We are an audience of 83% male, 17% female, give or take. And we have quite a few women that check out what we do because of the stories we do on kids, along as the college and pro stuff. So this year, the book is Tender Lions, Building the Vital Relationship Between Father and Son. In studio, I have Jeff Becker with me. Jeff is someone that I've known for a number of years through basketball. He's been at Powerhouse Hoops. He coached my son. Jeff is one of the very absolute best people that I know on the face of the planet that cares tremendously about kids. His father joins us via Skype, Brian Becker. Brian consults with companies and nonprofits to improve their overall culture. I'm reading from the book here on the back side. Brian is the one that put this book together with Jeff, father and son. And as we bring Brian Becker in, thank you so much via Skype for joining us. Where are you today, Brian?
Thanks for having me on, Brad and Jeff. I'm in Chicagoland today. That's where I live.
Great. So why this book? Where did it start? Where did the backstories come from? Let's just lay it out there for the fans. What made you decide to go down a path of a book with your son?
Well, there were two important things. One was I was very aware because of the work I'd been doing about how fatherlessness is really like an epidemic, if we were to make it a medical term, in America today. Very, very high percentage of kids, boys particularly, don't live with their dads. A lot of dads are physically present in the home but emotionally checked out for a lot of reasons. And we saw the effects of that. It's dramatic. And then secondly, 20 years ago, Brad, I was a pretty destructive dad. I had a job where I traveled too much, I partied too much, I got involved with pornography, I crossed a lot of boundaries. When the implications of that came crashing down on my family, it was really hard, really hard. And so here we are, jump forward, you know, I'm now 61, Jeff's 31. A couple years ago, we said, you know, we really, by the grace of God and a lot of hard work, we put our family back together in a pretty healthy way, emotionally, relationally. Let's tell the story, and maybe some other dads and sons will benefit from it.
And Jeff joins us here in studio. How bad was it as a kid for you? A, B, are you surprised you're sitting here talking about the resolution and making a difference now?
You know, at the time growing up, my dad was, he was around, you know, and he almost lived this double life that he talks about now. And he was a man of faith. He was a person in the church. He had a great job. He came to all our basketball, baseball games. Like, so I already had a relationship that we already merged. And he pretty much dropped his bomb and ripped his Band-Aid off and said, here's who I am. And I was 13, 14 years old.
Do you remember where and when?
Oh, absolutely. I was sitting in our living room, and I vividly remember the time and seeing how hard my mother was crying. But as a young man growing up, growing into a young adolescence, I didn't truly fully understand what was going on. I just knew that it was really hurting my mother.
Mm-hmm. And in your space, Brian, to sit there to get to that point where you were so broken that you felt like you had to tell your family what was going on, walk me through that, because I'm guessing there's probably some men that are watching this right now that either are thinking of that or have already been through it that can relate.
Well, I because of how significant the issues were, the problems that I caused for myself, went as far as I became unfaithful in my marriage, and I swore I would keep that a secret forever. I would go to my grave, and what I didn't realize was how those secrets can just suck you down. And years after that, probably 10 years after that, I was still just so distraught by that that I determined that I needed to be honest with my wife and my kids. If I was ever going to be a guy with integrity, you know, I looked in the mirror 1,000 mornings and didn't like what I saw. And eventually I got the courage to get honest about that. And actually, I think, Brad, there's three really important lessons for my family and hopefully for any dad that wants to improve the relationship with his kids. You know, I had to get honest with myself and those around me. That was hard, but really important. Without honesty, there's no trust in a relationship. Secondly, we were going down a road we did not understand, and we needed help. And we talked to good friends and people who understood how to rebuild relationships, got good counseling. And thirdly, you know, when something like this happens in the family, the emotions run really high. People are angry. People are afraid. I had pride and ego issues that were going on back then. So the third thing is the spirit of humility was really important. So honesty, help, and humility.
I grew up without a dad. My dad took off when I was 9. Mm. So when I'm reading this book and going around fatherless in my teen years and professionally for all these years, there have been times where I wish I had somebody that I could just talk to when I'm trying to open a business or when I'm making big life decisions or when I have 4 kids and I'm trying to do everything that I did not get, which I think at times has been really good. I think at times it's been hurtful. Have you heard that same sort of response to this book? Because it really touched me in a way of, okay, at the end of each chapter, guys, just so you know, there's questions. And these questions are pretty darn direct. And you've got to be very, very open with it. So I guess what I'm wondering, Brian, is have you heard feedback from the fatherless like myself on this book?
Yes. In the last couple of months, I've gotten emails, phone calls, had lunch with a couple of men. And to a person, what I've heard was because Jeff used the term rip the Band-Aid off, you know, we didn't start out by soft pedaling our story. I mean, we went right into it on page 1 of the book.
Yep, very quickly.
By us being vulnerable, we've given other men the permission, if you will, to be vulnerable as well, and hopefully to somehow find a way to find the courage to get honest about what's happened in their life, whether it's like our situation or someone else.
Tender Lions is the name of the book. Brian Becker, Jeff Becker, the Becker father and son, with Jeff here in studio. What do you like most about this book and how it turned out?
That's a very loaded question. But I think the biggest thing is that we don't have PhDs. We don't have doctorates or masters in relationship psychology, anything like that. We have a personal story. And I think that's the most comforting thing to hear, because as we were talking off air, is everyone holds secrets. Everyone has mm-hmm. some type of demon or dark something inside of them. And my dad just talked about vulnerability. And I think that communication, vulnerability, integrity, being humble, being honest, getting help, all that can hit home with anybody, whether you're male, female, teenager, I'm 31, you know, anybody a little bit older, everyone has something inside of them that we can let out, and it's okay to let that out, I think.
But as guys, we're really stubborn. As guys, we're afraid to be vulnerable,
absolutely,
right? So you have to have those people in your lives. Brian, how was your wife through this?
Well, rightfully so. She was angry, really angry, and hurt. Beyond, if the scale goes from 1 to 10, Brad, she was about a 14, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, and good conversation, tempers came down, saner conversation happened. She saw that I was repentant. I was really sorry for what happened. Then I was getting counseling and going to recovery meetings. And over time, she forgave me. And it was a long time, many months. And I understand that. Today, I feel like emotionally we're connected better than we ever were. We've been married almost 36 years. But there was a couple-year period in the middle there that was really, really challenging, really tough for her and for Jeff and his sister.
When you guys are sitting there working on the book, for this is for both of you, were there moments where you looked at one another and this has to be in the book, and Jeff, you were, wow, I didn't know. And how did you handle those conversations and the editing part of putting this together? Because it is very graphic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's sugarcoated. From page one, as Brian said, were there times where you had to have some uncomfortable conversations about, wow, we're putting this in a book on paper for everybody to see?
I'll start, and Dad, if you want to move in as well. It started with, we sat down for hours and said, okay, we can't turn back time. We can't redo what happened, but hopefully we can talk about what can we do to tell our story. But if we could do this all over again, what would we really honestly say to someone that's reading this? It's kind of a guide. And it's interesting because we started as just writing stories or moments or things that I remembered compared to what he remembers.
Mm-hmm. And some are very good.
Yeah.
Some are very happy and right. Very... I guess Midwestern.
Yep.
That's where it was,
yeah.
Right? So it's very nice, very
yeah.
pretty. But to peel that back, to peel the onion back, as we said mm-hmm. earlier, to get to that point, how difficult was it?
Well, do you stay with the onion metaphor? Some of it was really raw, and some of it made us cry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We went through an incredibly challenging time. You know, I saw in Jeff, he was 14 when all this, you know, came out. He was really angry with me, primarily because of how much I hurt his mom, my wife. Secondly, he was afraid. You know, his life was turned upside down. Would he change schools? Would we get divorced? Would he have to move? Would all of his friends find out about this? And thirdly, he was isolated. And those three things, being angry, being afraid and being isolated, that happens to so many young men when they don't have a strong emotional connection to their dad. And, you know, Jeff, maybe you could share some of the stats that we discovered when we were doing research for the book.
Yeah, it's so eye-opening that as we looked at fatherlessness and, you know, whether you're physically or psychologically not there, you know, 71% of teen pregnancies is a result of fatherlessness. 85% are of child behavior disorders, childlessness or fatherlessness. 90% of runaway and homelessness. All is due to the fact that there's not a father in the home. And it's so, you know, as we go back to our first kind of question, is it's an epidemic. There needs to be someone in these, not just a son, but in a child's life that is a true positive mentor to get them out of these situations or these deep, dark demons.
There's no question. I mean, I just think of my own personal situation. It was coaches like
yep.
yourself, and that's probably what has drawn you to be a coach, and
yep.
a very good one. I mean, if I say Jeff Becker around the state of Arizona, people are like, great guy, knows his basketball, but an even better person. So I can see that. Brian, if someone picks up this book, what are they going to get out of it?
Well, they're going to get, I think, an emotional roller coaster ride of hard things and good things that will help them see that, one, raising a boy to be a man is too important to leave to chance. I think they're going to see that it's never too late to take the first step in the right direction. And here's the real ironic thing, Brad, is that all of that that I kept secret for such a long time, when I finally got the courage to take what was down in the dark and put it in the light, I found that in that the roots of that darkness were the seeds to better life for me and my family ahead by dealing with that. And I wish I could have done it years and years earlier.
The name of the book is Tender Lions, Building the Vital Relationship Between Father and Son. Brian Becker via Skype, Jeff Becker here in studio. Guys, thanks and happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
We'll have Good Eat the Movies coming up here in about 10 minutes. So tonight, the Diamondbacks are in Washington. And I'm in that space of, I'm not bringing up the Diamondbacks just to say the Diamondbacks every day. They're in the wild card race. Last time I checked, they're two back in the wild card. And that may have changed last night after they won. They beat Philadelphia 2-0. But they have Greinke on the mound tonight in Washington. Merrill Kelly's turned out to be really good lately. He's fun to watch. And Archie feels like he's starting to get some pieces figured out in his head. He's come out of a slump. We all go through slumps. All of us do. And you got to just fight through it. You got to work through it. I think Archie Bradley has been able to do that. I don't know if it's going to last consistently or not for him, but he's played much better. USA Women's Soccer, and it is that time of year where I am a World Cup fan. Doesn't matter if it's guys or girls. I am a fan of soccer. So people have said you're not doing as much on Rising this year as you did last year. Yeah, because Rising needs to stand on their own two feet, which they say they are. They say they are. The grind to get into MLS, we'll see if they're still standing on their own two feet. I'm just in that kind of, let's see how things go. So my attention has been on the USA women's team. When they beat Thailand 13-0 the other day, you could sense that there was going to be this social media reaction of, oh, the USA is piling on these poor girls. If you've played competitive sports and you've been on the side of the one getting piled on, it's no fun. I remember coaching a game and I lost my point guard. If you don't have a point guard in youth basketball, you're done. You're going to get crushed. And the other team kept pressing us, and they were up 50, and they kept pressing us. And I looked over at the coach. I just said, really? And he said, hey, you got to fight through it. He was right. So for the USA women to win in a five-goal performance by Alex Morgan, 13-0, in the last 48 hours has been nothing but pounding on the USA or saying, what are they supposed to do? And that's where I land on this conversation. What are they supposed to do? When you're playing an inferior team, the worst that you can do is sit there and just kick the ball back and forth. You guys ever been in that space where you've been the one crushing another team and you go into four corners in basketball? Or if you're beating the snot out of a football team, you just turn around, hand the ball off, and you demoralize them even more? That's what was happening the other day with Thailand and the USA. I do not blame the USA women for scoring 13 goals. And I don't buy into the argument of, well, if it was the men, nobody'd be saying something like this. Sometimes we just immediately want to go to the gender equity position in a debate and conversation. And I'm seeing that more and more and more. I am. So what if the men win 13-0 or the women win 13? Who cares? In the goal differential, which matters most in these tournaments, you better roll up a bunch of goals. There's a goal differential. And so what they did the other day, I had no problem with. The celebration part of it, that is part of society today that some people struggle with. Just hand the ball. You're Larry Fitzgerald, hand the ball off to the referee and run back to the sideline. And then when he does lose his mind, people are like, oh my gosh, look what he did. Celebration in women's sports, when Brandi Chastain ripped off her jersey and sat there on her knees wearing her sports bra after they won it all, and it became like this iconic moment in sport, which to even this day when they show the women of the 90s, they will show that shot over and over and over. Alex Morgan wagging her fingers of five is a little much to me. It is a little much. Megan Rapinoe having a bit of celebration about her is fine to a point. So there is that anti-American sentiment that is going to be out there. It's a ridiculous argument to me to say, stop scoring goals because they're that bad. That's bad. That is showing up your teammate or the team you're playing against. That is not being having good sportsmanship. Yeah, we're just going to kick the ball back and forth for 6 minutes because we're up winning 6-0, 8-0, 10-0. No, just keep scoring. No problem with that. It's opening round at Pebble Beach. And then we'll get to Goody. It's opening round at Pebble Beach. So Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open, what a great backdrop. We talked about how Phoenix and TPC Scottsdale is trying to figure out a way. I brought this up years ago, and it bears being mentioned here today. TPC Scottsdale has been trying to figure out a way to get in the rotation for a PGA championship or a U.S. Open. I think it's more likely a PGA championship. Because that event has been moved to May, are the temperatures going to be too hot? That's the first item that people check off. But here's the other side of it. Could you imagine a PGA championship where you go through hole 15, 16, 17, and 18 at TPC Scottsdale? When it's a Sunday afternoon or a Ryder Cup, because that's been talked about as well in Scottsdale, having a Ryder Cup. And this just isn't filling time on a show. This is real stuff. Can you have a Ryder Cup in September? Or can you have a PGA championship? I don't know about a U.S. Open if the course is not difficult enough, the time of year, so on and so forth. We are going to have college playoff championships here next year at Greyhawk on both the women's and the men's side in college. On the pro side, they're trying. So I look at this as a good thing for our community. I look at Pebble Beach as, yes, it's iconic. It would be great. I don't know if PGA players would want to come play here. Last weekend, Rory McIlroy, I thought, took a big shot at the Waste Management Open. He won in Canada. Fans were cheering. He said, you know, I've been to some events where fans don't know how to cheer. They can't stop cheering. They're inappropriate, and they say things that they really shouldn't say. Well, okay, you're calling out Scottsdale. I got it. This weekend, with the backdrop and wanting to see Tiger and Phil compete and likely having Brooks Koepka blow through the field again, I'm going to be into that. Goody is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now, because we can't wait till game six tonight, we know what's going on in sports, and I think I saw Bill wipe a tear last night. I think. Did you? We're at Toy Story 4. I know you want to wait till next week on this, but did you wipe a tear?
I didn't, but I could have. I mean, I guess. I'm fine talking about it. Actually, the embargo lifted, as you know.
Yeah.
And since none of my editors have posted my review yet, so I'm fine talking about it all. I thought that there were parts of it that were set. I'll tell you what I said. Actually, this is like the most inessential movie since Godfather Part 3. I mean, there's no reason
You ripped it. You killed it.
No, I did not. And put up no. And then I come back and I say no. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's not bad. It's good. But there's no reason for it. I mean, you had this perfect thing. I mean, the Toy Story trilogy is truly one of the greatest franchises in the history of movies, of all movies.
Yeah.
Not just animated. I mean, it's perfect. It leads to something, and it ends perfectly, right? We discussed that last night. So this is good. If you had never seen the Toy Story movie before, you would think that this was insanely great, as they used to say, as John Lasseter. He used to say that was the bar for a Pixar movie. It has to be insanely great. This is not insanely great, but it is good. And, you know, some of the new characters I like more than others. I didn't think it had that same Pixar magic until, I would say, the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it kind of kicked in. But it was not start to finish, you know, their best.
It's not going to win an award. It had some laughs. I thought there was some clever writing. I thought there was some clever moments. It's 89 minutes, which I like. You know, get me in.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, right. Give me.
What did you think better would have been 88.
What did your daughter think of it?
She liked it. She thought sort of the same thing that, I mean, she thought that it got, I mean, you don't need to see much play, but I'll say this, and she reflected on this as well. While Toy Story 3 had maybe the perfect ending to that, this has a really good ending too.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, I saw somebody else write something that I thought was sort of an interesting way to put it. They said that this goes beyond endings. This is what happens after the end of the story. And that's a pretty, if you look at it that way, I think that's a pretty good way to look at it, actually.
Yeah, my wife sobbed My wife sobbed. She just couldn't stop sobbing. She was trying to hold it back, and she leans into me. She's like, "Why am I crying?" I said, "Because you've been at all four of these with our four kids. That's why you're crying. It's fine."
Well, you know, I was thinking about that sort of beyond ending thing, and I always wonder, you know, what happens after what happened the next day in a movie, and I've talked to filmmakers about it, directors and writers, and they hate that question. And I was talking to the Coen brothers once about Inside Llewyn Davis, which is a really good movie about a folk singer who never quite made it. And I said, "I know you guys are going to hate this question, but what's that guy doing now? What's he doing a year from now?" And one of them started to answer, and he said, "You know what? I do hate this question." He said, if I wanted to know what the guy was doing a year from now, we would have ended the movie a year from now.
Yeah.
He said, "I don't really care what he's doing." It's like, oh man.
Well. There were some characters within the movie, like, I'll just go off one character, and then we'll move on to your other movie, but a character named Sporky I just sat there initially like, okay, they really did come to the end of the road on this, for me.
I love Tony Hale, who voices him. You get a free pass for life for me, mostly, if you were in Arrested Development, and he was, but, well, I mean, it really is true, and this gives nothing away, because I'm sure this is in all the trailers, that Forky is a spork. That's why I keep getting it. He keeps saying, "I'm trash, I'm trash, I'm trash," because that's what he's made of. And after a while, it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Is it Bo Peep who says, "Wait, he really is a fork?"
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny. Yeah. And there's a lot of surprises within this movie. If you have kids, obviously, you need to go see it. But I think if you're our age, Bill, we're right there together in age wise. And if you've had your kids go through the first three, I don't think this is a waste of money. I don't think this is a waste.
No,
of time.
Not at all. It's good. And if there hadn't been three better ones before it, you'd think it was fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's true. All right. So you have The Dead Don't Die here that I'm supposed to talk to you about. So zombie movies to me don't really cut it. I've never been into Walking Dead. That's just me, my own personal thing. Is this movie any good, The Dead Don't Die?
Sadly, it's not very good, and it's got a great cast and a great director. I like a good zombie movie. I mean, Night of the Living Dead, I mean, that's one of my all-time favorite movies. And I remember reading in Fangoria magazine when I was a kid when that was going to come out, just reading the synopsis. I couldn't sleep for like 3 days. It was so scary. This is Jim Jarmusch, who's sort of an art house guy who does, like, you know, sort of thoughtful movies and stuff. He did a vampire movie a couple years ago called Only Lovers Left Alive, and that was great. So I was like, man, this is going to be great, because it's got Bill Murray and it's got Adam Driver and Tilda Swinton and all these people on it. This is going to be great. And it's just like this, just one note, just kind of like, you know, self-aware thing that just goes on and on and on. It's, you know, it's exactly what you think it is. There are zombies, and Bill Murray and Adam Driver and Chloe Sevigny are cops who are trying to, in this small town, who are trying to figure out how to stop it, but they don't really know. And it's a political movie. It's based on, you know, tone deafness and ignorance towards global warming, which is, you know, good on that front, but it doesn't do anything more than that. I mean, all these zombies they figure out are being caused by what they call polar fracking. They figured out they can get oil, you know, out of the polar ice caps if they dig deep enough. But it's kind of tilted the Earth a little bit off its axis. And among other things, it's brought the dead back to life. And as they often are in movies, when they come back to life, they seem to like to eat other people. Although Iggy Pop is another favorite of Jim Jarmusch, he seems to like to drink coffee in addition to eating other people. So.
This looks dreadful. It looks dreadful.
It shouldn't be. And it's there's a lot of inside jokes, and there's a lot of breaking the fourth wall. Like, there's a song by the country singer Sturgill Simpson in the song in the movie. The theme song is called "The Dead Don't Die," and they play it over the opening credits. You know, 5 minutes into the movie, Bill Murray and Adam Driver are riding around in their cop car, and things are going weird, and their radio goes out. So they listen to the regular radio, and that song comes on. And Bill Murray says, "Wow, this sounds familiar." And Adam Driver says, "Yeah, of course, it's the theme song." And then, you know, and there's a lot of stuff like that that goes back and forth. But it should be funny, and it just fell really flat to me, which is a huge disappointment.
Before I get you out of here, talking with Goody at the movies, AZ Central, chief film critic for Gannett, media mogul, everything that you want to know around media with Bill. Are you a fan of Mike Breen's?
No.
So it's not just me then. So there's times in this series.
I'm not a fan of the whole team. I don't like any of them.
You don't like Van Gundy? Really?
No. He should be the third guy. He shouldn't be the second guy. And Mark Jackson is. Mark Jackson, I'll tell you what I think of Mark Jackson. That's the approach that evidently Jim Jarmusch took to The Dead Don't Die. It's just that one that you know, that just sort of monotone,
Yeah.
I get sick of their – I wish it was Marv Albert and what's her name, the sideline reporter.
Doris
for
Burke.
But,
Doris Burke.
Doris Burke. I wish it was Marv Albert and Doris Burke. I think that'd be a great team.
So Mike Breen, whenever something happens that's anywhere near controversial towards the NBA, he's not going to talk about it. And I know he's getting his check signed from downtown New York City, but that's not what you're there for. You are there to, when the referees do blow a call, to say they blew a call, or when the game is not good, he's just there as a house guy. I get it, but man, oh man, it's annoying. I want people to speak truth rather than just say, oh my gosh, the Warriors are only down 12 with a 50 seconds remaining. Like, there's a possibility of coming back. I get it. You're diving for ratings points, but man, it's annoying.
Well, I agree. But I also get tired of their shtick. You know what they're doing is, remember how in the late 80s and the 90s when Overman and Dan Patrick sort of reinvented SportsCenter?
Yeah.
And every local sportscaster tried to, like, do their own version of it. It was really horrible.
Yes.
I think that's what's going on here with these. Everybody wants to do the TNT pregame and halftime show with Barkley and Kenny Smith and those guys. They all think that's, you know, that show is great because those guys have genuine chemistry and they're actually funny, and they also have the benefit of knowing what they're talking about. I have no doubt that Mike Breen knows what he's talking about, and that Van Gundy and Mark Jackson clearly know what they're talking about, but I just think they try too hard to be funny.
That's a good way to put it.
Just give me the daggone game, you know?
Are you in the camp of the Warriors medical team screwed up with Durant?
No, because I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know anything about medicine. You know, the old medical degree got lost along the way.
Right. I find that to be the interesting side of all this story, and I'll let you go off this. It's just that supposedly the Warriors talked him into playing, then he said, well, no, they really didn't, and now should he sit a year at Golden State, or should he still leave even though he can't play until next spring, and who's to blame for him blowing up his Achilles? And it's sports, guys. This stuff does happen.
I feel like if he didn't want to play, he wouldn't have played. I don't think anybody made him, you know?
Right. Right. I think it's interesting he didn't go back with his team. He just went right to New York to get his Achilles fixed. So it's just, I got a free agency. I got to get after it. So
he's trying on Knicks outfits.
That's it. I'll see you soon. Stay well.
All right.
It's good at the movies. Appreciate Bill. Yeah, he did not give it up, but I think he wiped his tears. He wiped his eyes. I wiped my eyes last night. Yeah, Toy Story, it did get me. All right, Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, senior executive vice president of everything or nothing, depending on the day. Great stuff, as always, from both of them. We're going to head over and work on content now on the website at sports360az.com, sports360az.com. Guys, if you're just finding us, we are self-funded. The commercials you see in this show, those sponsors, those advertisers, believe in what we are doing. We appreciate their support. Please support them. And make sure you can check us out and download this podcast and share it with your friends as well. Have a great day.